Succession number 11377, reel 22.
Mr. W. Bateman, reel 22. At this gap, what were the scenes that you were seeing, Mr. Bateman, as you went through?
Well, if I can remember that some turret, it's where the RAF had bombed all the retreat and transport, and where our other tanks had blown other tanks up. It was all shoved by the side of the road because the bulldozers had been going to make a way for us coming through. But there was no respect for the juries was half hanging out the tanks, and some were smelling and some were half burnt, and that they'd just been shoved, and there was dead horses and cows on the road. Mm.
Did you have any feelings seeing all these
no,
dead
No, we didn't have any feelings at all. We just went through, we just looked over and said, oh, that's a poor bugger that's gone and all. And we never had no feelings at all. Because we'd been told what jury had been like. And we always said, well, Sam Wright, he's got what we'd done to him and everything like. And it was nearly all the way through. Right through the Fleas Gap, there was loads of, but there was... Trouble is those pockets of resistance, and every now and then you'd find shots flying out, and the trucks would stop, and there would be the companies would be deployed, and round them all up and everything like. And nighttime was the worst. Was when we come with either the French Resistance or the Mackie, what they called the FFI or something was. And they would come and they would start shooting their guns off at night time, and sometimes they didn't know where they were shooting from and out. And we didn't know whether they were juries or what, because as far as the language is concerned, we weren't bothered about it.
Did you meet many of the resistance?
One or two, not much, but no conversation, just passing by. And sometimes they would ask for ammunition, like, and I said, well, we couldn't give them ammunition, like. We said we should have to go see the quartermaster.
Were you seeing much in the way of French civilians as you were going through now? Through the
one or two, They were very cautious, see, because Chilly Soul's been changing hands. They welcomed us forward, and then I was somewhere to go back, and the juries came back, and that's when we saw all these dead bodies. They nearly massacred all Chilly Soul civilians.
Mm. Like you saw dead civilians in Chilly?
All in this gutter, all this in there, like a stream. Mm.
And this had been one of the German units?
One of the German units had done that after we'd withdrawn. And then when we went back again, we'd found them all. There was about 50 dead bodies. All had been bayoneted.
Bayoneted?
All women. They were all women, but where the menfolk were, because I think Jerry Weber just took the menfolk away, but they were all women and children. And they were smelled and all. And the French Red Cross came up and took them away, like.
Did this anger you?
Oh, yes. That must have been terrible for them. Mm. And on the way up, we came across a village there, and all of a sudden we were stopped. And they found a sniper in a church tower. So we tore, like. And so we waited, like, and... This armoured car came up with a gun on, and somebody says, can you shoot that tower down, like? And they said, oh, I think we could, like. This is what we're being told, like. So the gunner just lifted the gun and just blew the top off, and that's where the sniper had been. Mm. They often used to be in church towers, snipers.
Mm. These were as great a nuisance as your booby traps?
Oh, yes, they were just as... And
Was it usual to try to take a sniper prisoner or shoot him out?
Well, we didn't know, like, because we were signalers, see, we were the forward companies, we didn't know what they were doing, like. I don't think they bothered. All they wanted to get shot of the sniper, because sometimes maybe it won't, two or three of us, or maybe kill them, one or two of them, because they didn't like that. Because even Judy didn't like snipers, because a friend of mine, he was a sniper, Obadiah Stewart, he belonged for a hill, and he was tortured before we found him dead. When that was it, just outside Tilly. He'd gone forward to someone to do some sniping. But I was just told this lad that he'd been tortured before he died, because he said he was in a terrible mess.
And basically, you were still using the same kind of methods and equipment as you had used in India, with your lines and your telephones. Oh, nothing had changed a great deal.
They had radios, but see, I hadn't no access to radios, because I was a lineman. I was told to consider myself really at the lines, because there was a few more signals back in the HQ, and they came up with the radios on the backs, like.
Had you been promoted again?
I think I'd been promoted to Unscorpal again. On the chase, or on the freeze gap. And then, all of a sudden we came, all of a sudden there's one big dash. And next thing we know, we're coming across the River Seine. And the, all the transport there, and we said, bye, I hope Jerry doesn't come over in his bombers. And then we got talking, when we stopped, we were talking to the Red Captain, we says, have you been bombed, anything? He says, no, he says, you're all right, he says, Jerry doesn't seem to have an air force now. But when we started going over into up into Lille, before we got to Lille, Arras, and all them places, and we passed through just outside of Hooge, and that was a battle on in the 2nd Battalion. And they fought in the First World War. And we could hear the flying bombs going over. And we says, oh, where's that one off to?
Did you know what they were?
We didn't know. No, we didn't know what they were till we got told, like, about them. Because we had a radio, and we used to often listen to when the battery was all right, because it was a six-volt battery. Because if there was the truck, you should just tap it down on the truck, like.
In that very, very quick advance over a number of days, weeks, how did you sleep and rest?
Just slept in the best way we could. Sometimes we would fall asleep on the trucks, and then when the trucks come to me, they would say, right, how to get up? Because we never undressed. We always had our equipment on, and we never had, we didn't have our boots off. Then we crossed the River Seine and went up into Arras, and we were amazed to see the monuments of the First World War, because they hadn't been touched. And we went through the Arras Gate, and we saw all the names there, but we never had time to stop. And I think we stopped at Lille. What we did at Lille, I can't remember. I know they gave us. We were billeted in a field, and this is right over, you can go into the Lille itself. So we.
When you stopped, what was the most important thing that you wanted to do? What was your priorities when you stopped and had a chance to rest?
Dig a hole for toilet. Because you should nearly dig our own, go and hedge back somewhere like that, where we could. Because we weren't allowed to go in houses, because being booby-trapped. He says, no, matter, so we're badly off for a number one or a number two. He says, don't go in the house toilets, because he says they could be booby-trapped. And we never, tell the truth, we never bothered about toilets till there. So we got up to Nijmegen that way, like the house toilets. Now, we managed to get, I think, a couple of nights out in Lille, but weren't allowed too long. They had to be back in the bivouac place where we bivouacked down.
About what date this was? Would this be when you reached Lille?
Dates we couldn't tell you. And then I can't remember how we went up after that. And then I think we come across the Albert Canal. I think next to the action we did.
Do you recall going through Brussels?
Yes, I remember going through Brussels. Was that before the Albert Canal or the after? I can't remember now. I think it was before. Because the Albert Canal, I think, was in Belgium, wasn't it? Belgium. Brussels is in Belgium, isn't it? Because we... See, Brussels, we went through Brussels. Oh, no, yes, that was it. We did the Albert Canal do, I think it was, and then we went through Brussels. And we had quite a trip through Brussels because everybody was cheering and everything like.
Well, we better deal with the Albert Canal before Brussels.
Well, I can't tell you much of the Albert Canal, to tell the truth. Because I was mainly back at the HQ. When we got over the Albert Canal, we went into this open field. And we dug in at the hedgerow, and the RSM put his truck in the middle of the field. And we all dug our slit trench and that, and set up an exchange it behind the hedge, best way we could, like, and got it covered in the best we could, like. And then we got to know that there was a German self-propelled gun and a tank on the loose. So they says, you better not move very far, like. And that's when this self-propelled gun started shelling the back. And I says, oh, we're going to have it here, like, because they were dropping all over in the field. But we were in the hedge backs all the way. But this, we thought the RSM's truck had been hit, but it wasn't. It missed him. Then they asked us to send this, take this line out to, I didn't think it was the A company, I think. I didn't know. I was one of the companies, like, and we had to go like in a detour because it was dusk. And they give us a map reference, but we couldn't tell the map reference and out in the dark. So what I did, I walked up and went round and went, and we found some Dutch houses, and the occupants was in the cellars, and we asked if there's anybody. And he's saying, and he's pointed us up the road, so we went up this road, still run this line out. So eventually found them in a barn, farmhouse. And they said, oh, keep down, because Jerry's just a couple hundred yards away in this wood. So I'll get the telephone connected up, like, and ring so, no answer. So I says, now then. So I got... I said, well, I have to go and trace it back, like. Because when we'd run out of cable, we had to keep joining it up. And I kept getting the first drum, and at the end I got through all right, but the second drum hadn't. And so I said, well, there's only one thing that I have to go and back and trace. So I traced it back, and that's when I found this Jerry, wounded Jerry, in a slit trench, like, and I got him out, like, and I laid him on the top. And then next thing I knew, the telephone line ended. There's no line. Some tanker, something had gone over it and lost it. But it had been dark. I couldn't find the other end.
Did the wounded German speak to you at all?
No, he just moaned. Just moaned, that's all. And so I said, well, there's only one thing I can go back to the company HQ. So I went back to there and we tried to get through on the radio. But there's no hope, like. So I said, well, there's only one thing to do. We'll have to wait till it's dawn and that get a bit lighter. I said, I'll make my way back. So the company commander says, give us a direction which way to go, like. So just as we set off, the CEO walked in. That's where we'd been, like. And I told him what had happened, like. So he says, get you back to company, you get back to your company HQ, like 2nd platoon.
Mm.
So I got back there. And what happened up to that, I can't remember, to tell the truth. So we started off, and then we had a big push forward, and we were just getting out pockets of resistance, and the next thing I knew, we're on a main road going towards Brussels. Mm. And we passed through Brussels, and everybody was cheering us, and we could hardly move, and they were jumping on the trucks and that. And we went into a barracks outside Brussels. Some old army barracks, they were like huts and everything like. And tell the truth, I can't tell you much about it. All we did was keep down in there. How long we stopped there, I don't know. Then the next thing we knew, we were on our way to a place called Neerpelt. That was on the Dutch-Belgian border. And this was getting on just before the paratroop drop. So that would be about back end of August, wouldn't it? I don't know when the paratroop was, the beginning of the September, was it? So we got there, now there's a bit of fun there here. So we set up in some old barn or something, I don't know where it was. I was part of a factory house. A factory, you know. So we set the telephone exchange up, like. So we get some lines, because the companies weren't very far away, so we managed to get some lines up. And we could, you know, when we connected the lines up, all the lights of the telephone, exchange came on. Oh, no communication, couldn't hear a thing. So I said, well, it was getting dark then, like. And I says, I don't know what the juice is matter here. As soon as you put the plug in, just getting a hum noise. See, you couldn't get up there. That rhymes us all right through, like. But we could speak to on the company, they could speak over it, but it was just hummed. You could disassociate. And instead of when you put the receiver down, the light didn't go out. Just came straight on again, because. So when we went out, like, and we found the fault, a high tension cable was down on the floor. It was putting power into the earth. Mm. And so I said, well, I wonder if that's the trouble. So what I did was, I said, go and pull the earth out further up there and see what happens there. And all of a sudden, the light went off. As soon as you put the earth pin in the ground, the light came on. Of course, when we went in there, we saw this pylon and the wire down, and the sparks was flying all over it, like. And Brooker says, have you got a remedy for it? I said, well, there's only one remedy for it, or I have to cut it. Oh, the hell are you going to cut that? I says, well, get me a spare stair cutters. There was big glass. So I pushed me, I says, I want a pair of Wellick boots. I says, I want a pair of rubber gloves. And I says, I want another pair of over rubbers to put right up my hip leg. He said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to cut it. I said, well, if I can get myself insulated from the. So I put the Garrison Wellington boots, where they got them from, I don't know, and some of these gas over leggings. And they went right up here, like, and I got some thick two pair of rubber gloves, and I put them on, great big old gauntlets on here. They got the stake, where they got the stake from, I don't know, so out it goes, like. No, I told him, I said, no, get well away, like. So it goes underneath it, like, and away it goes, like, so I gets one, and ooh, the sparks flew, and nothing came through me, because I'd. All right, like, but when there was a V burnt out the cutters. So that was all right, like, so another one. The one had, was already blown down, but this other one was not, that's where you're making it the sparks in the flower, you know. So goes onto that one. and I cut that one down, managed it with a chew to cut it down, and I cured it. The lights went out on the exchange. So we had another line to run out. Where was it to, I don't know, but there we go. And there were still two lines of this piling up, you know. There was the top wire and another one of the notches. And so we're walking along with the drum there. I was going with a stick through the drum, like one of them. And now suddenly just flew out of our hands. And the power that came through that made us, it didn't have jump, make us jump. But when we'd gone underneath the field of force, had gone into the coil of wire and multiplied, and the drew helium just jumped out of our hands. I couldn't believe it. So, going back, I said, well, what happened there? So we thought maybe it's some caution, so I picked it up again, walked back in, and up it jumps out again. So what we had to do, we had to keep it on the floor and roll it. He said, lifting it out. He said, roll it along till we got clear, and then we had to lift up again. It's marvellous, though, that field of force. And I also came across that field of force again when I was working on telephones at Stockton. We went, we parked the lorry to get at 10 o'clock under this high tension at Stockton, you know. Never thinking, mate. And we're inside. The driver went out and he touched the side and he jumped in there. He says, there's electric on this. And I says, aye, I'd really like. I says, get yourself drove from underneath this power line. Because the field of force had come down, you know. Mm. So we stuck there on this knee belt on the canal, like. And then all of a sudden we heard the preparation for the airborne going through, like. So we were on the bridge, and we'd had the line run out. We had the line to the bridge, like, and we're on this line across to the company that was in front of the. And we stood there, and we saw all this preparation coming up. The 4th Armoured was coming up all the tanks, like. And the filler men came up, like, says, oh, we hope it's just taken air. He says, oh, no, we're not taking you. We're taking the ones that are going through. He says, it's getting ready. So I says, well, we came up and took this place. That's for you to get yourselves through, like. No, he says, you couldn't take us. So we settled down there. And then that's when the airborne started coming. I think it was September.
Did you see that going on above
your
head?
Yes, we saw the aeroplanes and everything going. And the typhoons, fighters, the supposed to... we heard the artillery go up, start up, and then the typhoons came over their rockets, and they were supposed to knock all these anti-tank guns out that was in the woods, you know, all of a sudden in the woods. And by the way, there's another Alamein, do that. Mm. But there wasn't half a racket on, because we were not doing nothing there. We weren't engaged in it, because it was some fresh troops had come up with the. But before that, there was a staff car, and one of these a scout car. And the bloke, we told that they were going to, that this scout car had gone right through Jury Lines and gone into Eindhoven, and then they even come back through Jury Lines without being touched. Because they could do 60 and 65 miles an hour, them little scout cars. Mm. But we says, oh, you're tiddling off. But it eventually was, it was true, and we got to know about it. But all this shelling and that, we says, oh, well, there'd been out left there. But juries were still there, because when the 4th Armoured went through, I think the first two tanks were knocked out. And they stopped the others, and they knocked another 10 out. So it had to be nearly done all over again. And they found out that it had lined this wood with 88s and 75 millimetres, wheel to wheel, Jerry. And it just slaughtered the tanks as they came through. But they eventually got through. I think the baddies went up again. And they found out they'd been either fine short before or over top. Mm.
When you were linked to your companies, did each company have its own code name for communications?
I don't know what would I call them. I can't even tell the truth, I can't tell, I think. Just maybe A company. But the unit was never mentioned. What did the CO be called? I can't remember the code name of the C. It's a simple name. Can't remember now. Long time ago. Of course, I've never had nothing to do with signalling since I left the army. So we, and tell the truth, when we went through, started going through Eindhoven, and we didn't see much of it. Like, we just were in trucks, and we just kept went through Eindhoven. Tell the truth, I don't know what Eindhoven was like. And then we went to. Settled outside there, and I think we stopped. And that's when we started getting the trouble with Jerry. See, the corridor went through with the paratroopers, you know, dropping down, and then we built a corridor through. But every now and then, the column was getting infiltrated by Jerry. Eventually getting him cleaned out.
Did you have any trouble there with infiltration?
No, well, we did. They cut battalion through it, I think about twice. But we were always in the rear, signal platoon. And they were getting through by a dispatch rider. They were getting messages and that through by... Because we had nothing to do. We're on the move. We no got to lay lines out. We never laid any lines out till we got to Nijmegen. And we just kept going through and stopping overnight and moving forward. And it seemed quite quiet for us at the time being. Can't remember how... I can't remember what happened from once they started through Eindhoven. Well, now I remember going over the bridges, and I can't remember what happened till we got into Nijmegen.
Had you met American troops by now?
But by the side of the road, aye. I think it was the 102 Airborne Division and the 88th. But they seemed welcome us through, like they said. Keep going, you're all right, like, because all the bridges have been captured intact. Till we got to Nijmegen and found that they'd blown the front end of one of the bridges out.
You travelled a long distance by now. You must have been pretty tired.
We were very tired, because we were getting catnaps. And then we built it in Nijmegen, in this pagoda mission. And that's when we waited to cross the bridge. And then next thing we knew, the CO was going to, I think our companies had gone across, the companies had gone across the bridge. And then the CO says, right, he says, I'll take a couple of signals with us, and went in the Hillman trial. And that's when he did about 65 mile an hour across the ridge.
Were you with him?
No, it was me and another lad and his batman. And he said he'll drive, his driver. He says, I'll drive the truck, and he put his foot down. and he hit that Bailey Bridge, and I think we went in the airboat nearly so 60 yards. Because he hit it that force. Mm.
Were you just going as linesman again, or did you have wireless?
He had a wireless in his truck. But I had nothing to do with it till we got over the other side. Mm. It's very, very vague now, what happened there.